Have y'all tried the new Lysoltini?
No, but I did have a sex on the bleach.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on digital stream radio, where you can listen to the audio live stream every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Today, we're going to be joined by author David Ellison. He is the author of Santander, Rambling on Borrowed Time. It is a unique memoir, travelogue, and reflection on life. Santander features poignant short stories that, like pieces of a puzzle, create a captivating whole, exploring theme of personal growth, adventure, justice, wonder, disillusionment, and ultimately gratitude. He will join us on the second half of the show. My name is Tom, and I am your host. And as always, I'm here with all of my amazing people, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome, everyone, to the show. Elsie couldn't join us today. Unfortunately, Elsie is going through something personal. I don't care to discuss it on the show unless she wants to, but she couldn't make it on the show. And so we'll have a conversation with her, and we wish her well in through this difficult time. But again, it's something personal, and I would like for her to have the opportunity to talk about that. Before we get started, I would also like to issue an apology for our last week's guests, which was Ash and Chess. During the introduction, coming in from break, I misgendered Chess and accidentally called both of them ladies. And unfortunately, that was wrong. Chess is a transgender man, and I understand the importance of being able to be identified correctly by our pronouns and how important that is for one's self-identity. And so I wanted to issue that apology on air, and truly, you know, it wasn't my intention to do that, but as a show that services the LGBT community, we should know better, and it deserves an apology. So again, my sincerest apologies to them both for that little mistake, and we're working on ways to avoid that from happening again. And so we're going to move right in. We've got all the boys in studio. Again, Elsie's not in studio, but, you know, online. Elsie's not with us, but we've got Chris back today, hopefully for the full episode.
You at least have me for the first half.
Well, that's wonderful.
Because class is going on right now.
So,
like, you're actually paying attention. You're drinking.
Well, absolutely. and Tyler's got, like, a rave going on in here. We got lights moving around and everything.
Well, that's cool. Well, it's always fun. So, Chris, it's great to have you back. So, tell us, being that, you know, you haven't been on for a while, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm getting acclimated to mass life, you know. I no longer am a Connecticut resident.
Boo.
I know. I live in the beautiful and gloomy part of Western Mass. But other than that, you know, I'm really happy where I am. I'm maintaining my social distancing. I am working, but when I'm working and I'm out in the public, I'm making sure to be protective as possible. I'm wearing gloves. I'm wearing masks, changing my gloves constantly, using sanitizer, and then just hanging out at home. I, as you can see, I have my keyboard behind me. I started composing again. Yeah, I started composing again, actually. I'm working on a piece right now. And then I'm just working hard to make sure to finish off the semester strong, because in a couple weeks, it's going to be finals. No, not even. Yeah. 2 weeks, it'll be finals, and that'll be the end of the semester.
That's awesome.
A weird semester. And if you think about it, I can understand so many high school students, including my boyfriend's sister. They're not going to be able to walk for graduation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird.
And yeah, my niece actually said to me, I would love for you to come to my graduation. And then she sent me a text and said, don't bother, because they're not having one. They're not walking.
Yeah. And, you know, I really felt for those students, because I know how important that milestone was in life for so many people, for all of us. And then I kind of thought about it. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be getting my first degree. It's an associate's degree, but it's a college earned degree that I worked hard for. And I'm not going to be able to walk for that. So I kind of been thinking about that a little bit, but I know I have many years to go. So there's going to be a day where I can put the cap and gown on once again, walk down, get my diploma, and get the recognition for the hard work that I did. But it is something that I started to think about every now and then.
Well, look at it this way. At least you save yourself anywhere between $150 to $175 for the cap and gown.
Absolutely.
Good point.
So, Nick, my dear, how are you, darling?
I'm good. I had a good week last week. I'm starting to, even though I'm a little stir crazy, I'm starting to get acclimated from working from home after like what, a month and a week now. So it's definitely different. I have a lot on my plate, but it's good. But what's my favorite part right now is that I had to bring home a bunch of the office plants. I think I talked about this on the show. And now I have office plants throughout my entire house. And so I've sort of like kind of dove into it 100%. Like I've replanted them. I've repotted them. I'm taking really good care of them. I'm even growing my own avocado tree. Like it's like my little like happy space. I love it.
I tell you, working with the earth and working with plants, you know, I'm a plant person. I have plants all over my house. It is very relaxing, and it also helps to put you in a different mood. And it also helps clear the air or clean the air in the house as well. So,
yeah. Greenery in the apartment, it's amazing. I love it.
So, you know, they go through that process of photosynthesis, you know, when the sun hits them, and you sort of kind of feel their happiness when you see them perk up, and, you know, just don't forget to water them. That's important too.
You know, I know.
You can't feed them vodka.
I got to bring this. Oh.
What?
You can't feed
them. That might explain why my plants didn't live. No, kidding. But I remember at your old place, Tom, you had so much, like so many plants all over the place. I love that. But then that's making me think of when I lived at my now old apartment, the one back in East Haven. I really wanted to get into getting plants in the house, and it felt so great. So I understand that, like, just that energy and that life in the apartment really like made me feel positive all the time. But then everything started to die. Everything was molding because the complex I lived in had a really bad mold problem. We were right next to a swamp. And
who are you kidding? It was your ass.
So I had to do some research on that. Mm. So you have to be really careful. I had a plant that started to mold, and I was like, why is this molding? Turns out it only needs water like every 7 to 14 days.
Right. And you need to know the way to take care of the plants. Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yes. Absolutely.
So I had to repot that one plant, and it got its first watering yesterday after 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, that could have been the issue, but the big thing that surprised me was, so I'm watering my plants, I'm taking care of them, I'm giving them sun, they're molding, they're dying. So I go to this grocery store in Guilford, and they have grow your own mushroom thing. So I'm like, okay, well, everything's molding in my house, so let me grow mushrooms. The motherfucking mushrooms dried out.
How do you and dry out fucking mushrooms? No, like, weird. Seriously.
I don't know. Everything molded to death, and then these dried to death. I couldn't win. So pretty much anything that comes in my house, I kill.
Mm. Well, just, you know, be nice to the plants. They're always nice to us, and, you know, we need them. So
I know that. I've seen the happening.
No, but like other than that, like things have been pretty good. I've just been like trying to catch up on some reading. I've got so many books that I'm trying to catch up on from all of our guests. But other than that, I'm just like, you know, planning a virtual gala. It's fine.
Speaking of virtual gala, we'll get into our first mention here for stories. But very quickly, my week went well. For whatever reason, it was Sunday night, and I'm like, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm still watching videos on Facebook. I couldn't sleep, and then I wake up. It's 5 o'clock, like 5:30 somewhere around there, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna go downstairs, log in, and just start working so that I could get out of work earlier today. Because you know, here's work gay talk, and here's work. Right by each other. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go downstairs, log in early, and just have a short day. And but that never works out that way. But overall, I'm well, and I'm thankful that I'm healthy and I'm home and got these four walls to protect me from the craziness that is COVID-19 and everything that's going on outside and outdoors. And so it's all good.
Can I ask the group, has anybody tried anything crazy food-wise? Because now I'm cooking all the time. And, like, I just, like, come, like, we're all trying new things. Like, has anybody else tried something new?
This guy.
What did you eat? Because before he wouldn't eat olives, and now he's an olive freak.
Oh, I fucking love olives. They're always in the house. No. I mean, it's not weird. It's more like a different dish that we've been cooking a lot, and I cook a lot with my boyfriend's mom, actually. We're, like, great in the kitchen together. We have a lot of fun.
Until you dirty up her stove, but that's okay.
No, then she's still butthurt about that,
Trish. I am.
Whatever. I know. I got my carton of cigarettes out of it. Whatever.
I let her babysit my house, and when I come back, there's grease all over the stove. And I'm like, what did you do? She's like, I cooked steak. And I'm like,
I fed the dogs.
Okay, well, that's important.
They were alive.
They were alive. Exactly. Thank you. Exactly. So I did make this dish. One of my, I don't know if you guys watched Chopped or any of our listeners watched Chopped, but one of my favorite judges, it's excuse me, Amanda Freitag. Love her. And I have one of her cookbooks. It's like the Cook Next Door, the Chef Next Door. And I made, it's called Coco Vaughn. It's basically a chicken cooked in wine.
Oh, of course you made that.
Anything yeah, that's cooked I mean, in oh, alcohol, like, you cook.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not talking like, you know, you put a quarter cup or a splash of wine. No, this is a whole bottle of wine that goes into this. And you're supposed to traditionally marinate the dish in wine overnight or for 24 hours. But this was, she called it easy coq au vin because you don't do the marinating. So yeah, it did mushrooms, onions, and all that. And you cooked it down. Bacon, you start with bacon fats, you know, to make it good. It's French. Everything's going to be butter and fat. Yeah. Then you pour the whole bottle of wine in, you cook it down after you made a roux with the bacon fat, and then you add the chicken in. And we even made a nice risotto and put it over risotto. It was like our fancy meal.
So let me ask you, before pouring that whole entire bottle of wine into the chicken, did you take a swig of it? I know you did.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, hello. You have to, you know, test the specimen.
Oh, that sounds delicious, though.
It came out really good, and it did have, like, a wine taste to it, but, you know, you cook the wine down, you reduce it by half or so, and it was really yummy. It was really good, and then the risotto was really nice and creamy underneath it. It was a cool, fancy meal.
Nice. That's awesome.
What did you make, Nick?
I didn't, so I've been cooking, like, every week. I mean, every day, but, like, no,
I'm kidding. I'm sorry. I'm sure you've done more.
Yeah, no, I've been like, like, it really depends on what I have. But the reason I bring it up is because the other day my roommate wanted to make he bakes a lot, and he wanted to make a gluten free cake. And I was like, oh, God, I can't believe I'm letting him cook gluten free in his house. It smelled so bad. So bad. And he, like, I'm like, Pat, I think it's burnt. He's like, no, I think that's just the smell. I'm like, okay. The frosting smelled like vinegar, but it was so good. It was so good. I was like really surprised. Literally, he used vinegar in the frosting, and it was so good.
It sounds. I don't know. Like, I would have to taste it to know, right? Yeah. Like, you know how you always look at certain things, and you look at food, and you're like, yeah, that doesn't look like it's gonna taste good. But typically, those end up being the things that you're like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like sea urchin, it looks like a, you know, a yellow snot, but it tastes like heaven.
Ew, that's gross.
Yeah.
The only other thing that I want, the only other thing I want to bring up, unless Tom, you want to talk about cooking rice?
No.
Well, no. Hold on. Tom had some really yummy looking hamburger helper on the stove that he posted on Facebook the other day.
I just threw a little bit of everything in it. You know, I had ground beef, I had peppers and onions and garlic, and I'm just throwing all this stuff in there, and ginger, and it was so good. I ate that for 3 days.
That does sound really good, actually.
Yeah, I just had anything that I had in the fridge that I knew that was gone, then I sprinkled some Parmesan cheese all over it on the dish.
Gotta have
it. It was amazing.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
One thing I will say for those people who are shopping out there, we find it, well, one, this, I mean, it's not like a breakthrough in like saving some money, but it's something that we've noticed here in this household. For those people who like to buy shredded cheese, save yourself the money and buy the brick of cheese and shred it yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One, it tastes better. It tastes better. And then if there are lactose intolerant people out there, such as myself, to save your asshole and your toilet, you can get very
and
sharp
your boyfriend.
Shredders. and my boyfriend. Exactly. Yeah, that's very important too. You can buy extra sharp cheddars. You can buy Munster cheese, really sharp aged Swiss cheeses. But yeah, go out, buy the whole block. Also, don't forget about fresh produce right now. Everyone's just flocking to get all the frozen goods and stock up, or all the canned goods and stuff. But there's all that fresh produce that people are leaving behind. So that's mm-hmm. another thing to look for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I picked up salad and stuff like that. And
good. Yeah, absolutely. And eat the fresh stuff. Like, there's no reason we should be punishing our bodies during this.
I made a really good salad. And you remember that salad spinner that I bought for Trish, but I kept it in my house? It's amazing.
I have one now, so it's fine.
Still waiting for my Sure Shot or whatever it's called. No, that's a douche.
You're tushy. Try again.
That one, tushy.
My dad just got one in the mail. He ordered one online. He tried to use the Gay Talk code. No, tushy. He's like, I'm worried about toilet paper. I was like, order a tushy. He literally just got it yesterday.
It was on NPR when this first started, actually. I heard it. I was like, they were on our show.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
But all so right. I wanted to bring up something random and personal before we jump into stories. I'm sorry, Tom. I know you want to talk about some stuff, but so like dating right now, it's you can't, right? You can't date. But I've been talking to this guy on Tinder for like a long time. And we keep talking because like we want to go on a date, but we can't. So this past weekend, we finally exchanged numbers. And now we decided we're going to have a date on Friday. It's a virtual date. And I told him that he can pick anything that he wants to cook, and I'll go to the store and make it, and we're going to cook together.
Oh, that's... Oh, so wait.
That's a really cute idea.
Isn't that a cute idea?
So you're going to cook what he's making, what he decides, and he's going to cook it as well, and then you both eat together.
Exactly.
Well, that's cute.
A cute idea.
Isn't that cute?
So what happens when, like, for example, you have a roommate, and so when you're having your conversations and y'all having a kiki over video cooking, is that going to be awkward, like, to have, you know, do you guys have those, like, you know, sexy conversations, or... Have you not gotten there yet?
Well, technically, this is a first date. So.
Okay.
First virtual date. So, no, we have not gotten to that place. I mean, we do... Yeah,
this isn't Jerkmate.
We do talk. Yeah. I mean, like, we're a little sexual, but, like, it's not like that.
Okay,
but,
well, you know.
But oh, my God.
I think it's just kind of really cute and, like, fun.
I think that's a cute idea.
Yeah.
You know what would also be good? You could go canoeing. That's approximately 6 feet apart.
Which is so funny because Pat and I are looking at kayaks to buy.
Well, those are a little closer unless you get separate ones. But yeah.
I've got my oar. I'll push them away.
Okay. Or smack them. Either or.
But there are like, it's weird because now we have to like think in an innovative way so that we can still have a connection and still potentially date. Like I'm single. I want to keep dating
or
start again at least. And this one person I've been wanting to like actually spend time with, and now we're like, I was like, let's just like pick a meal and cook it together and do it over FaceTime. And he was like, that sounds great. And I was like, I'll pick the meal. And he was like, all right.
I need to find someone first to be able to do something like that.
That's a cute idea. I like that very much.
Just a thought. I mean, if any of our listeners have any other thoughts about like virtual dating, please let us know, because I've been like racking my brain.
It's a whole new world, right? And like, you know, we're thinking, oh, you know, June is going to come and hopefully by then we'll be able to like get out of the house or whatever. But the effects of COVID-19 and what it's done for our society and businesses and the way we used to conduct our everyday life is going to be impacted far longer than I think we are thinking.
I'm thinking
100%. That for the next 18 months, we're going to see the effects of all of this. And I'm not saying that we're going to be quarantined for 18 months, but I think that we're not going to go back to the norm. And I think that things like this, like virtual dating and doing things online and all these amazing, like, for example, Zoom calls between family members and everybody, it has done something. We are in a unique situation in where our current technology afforded us the ability to connect without having to be in the same space. Can you imagine if this happened in 1995?
Oh, no. God, no.
No, it'd be incredibly difficult. I mean, when you look at how technology has helped us so much right now with dealing with COVID, when you look at different artists that are doing live shows via Facebook feed. If you look at Billie Eilish, if you look at Melissa Lady Gaga, Melissa Etheridge, Celine Dion, all these people who are working, they did a big Disney sing-along. Then we had different concerts coming from multiple states, multiple areas, from multiple groups. You have SNL constantly doing their radio or satellite shows. It's magnificent how much we've been able to utilize social media and our technology to really keep us together while we're alone.
I mean, I also think
it's really, really important to like know, like we're all like, obviously we need to consider the fact that we have to continue to support our first line workers, our hospital workers,
make sure
that they have the PPEs they need, ongoing, whatever. But like, if you look at the fact that there's so many arts organizations that are literally fighting for funds right now, but the arts and all of these things that you keep seeing online, that's what people are looking forward to. Like, people are looking forward to these live concerts, these artists that are like putting out their own free concerts. Like, these we need to keep making sure that not only are we supporting all of our health workers and our first line workers, like grocery stores and all of that, but we need to make sure that we're supporting all of our other like entertainment workers, because they're going to get us through this.
That's
like,
right.
Honestly, like they are. Tom watched a thing last night. I sat through Sondheim's 90th birthday celebration, and it was amazing. And it was
amazing. I've seen that.
It was so great. And like, we need to make sure that we're funding everything correctly, especially healthcare right now, we need to think about everybody so that we're all really being supported in every single way.
Agreed. And, you know, you mentioned that I was watching a show last night, and it's basically it's GLAAD's Together in Pride. You are not alone. We'll talk about that later on after our guest. But it was such an amazing show. I'm super excited and I'm stoked to talk about it because there's a lot of good stuff that happened on it. And so we'll definitely touch base on that. But now it is 6:22 p.m. We do have a guest coming in at 6:30. So what we're going to do is we're going to leave you with some music. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, David Ellison joins us to talk about his book. We're super excited. So here's some music and we will be right back.
Tomorrow's hopes are in my eyes. Paints horizons in the sky that's meant for me, meant for me. Ready now to face the day. Done with fears of yesterday. Waited long enough to say I'm on the way, I'm on the way. I believe. I believe.
And we are back from the break. That was, of course, Believe by Going Deeper, featuring Davis Mallory, which is a previous guest of ours. Joining us now, of course, is the star of the day. He is our guest. His name is David Ellison. He's the author of Santander, Rambling on Borrowed Time. Welcome to the show, David. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to be with y'all. So, greetings from California.
Greetings from sunny California. So
yeah, it's cold here.
It's very
cold.
And
it's gloomy as shit here in Western Maine. It's
beautiful here. Edgar and I were out for a hike earlier today. We get out almost every day.
That's awesome. It's amazing. Great. And it's also very important to, you know, obviously practicing social distancing to at least get out and go for a walk, you know, things that are healthy for the body. But David, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's obviously with COVID-19, it's weird being cooped up for so long. Actually, Edgar and I, when this thing hit, we were traveling in Brazil. And when we left, it was just something that was discussed. And we were gone for 17 days and we returned to a very, very different world. And we returned to a state that was pretty much under lockdown. And so, and for a while, we were worried where we were going to be able to get out of Brazil. But we made it home, and we've been home just the two of us ever since. It's a good thing we get along. So.
Well, that's important. That's
yeah, the three important. Of us would kill each other.
Pretty absolutely. Much.
So, so I know that Chris, unfortunately, he has to get to class, so he's got to leave us for the second half of the show. But I wanted him to have an opportunity to say hi and interact with you before we let him go.
Yeah, no, I wish I could be part of the conversation and hear more about your story. It's nice to see your face. The guys have filled me in all about you. Your place looks lovely, by the way.
It does.
Loving the vaulted ceilings.
Yes. Oh, that's my partner Edgar's place. So I moved in, 6 years ago? So we've been here for 6 years.
That's amazing. Awesome. Well, that's a beautiful place.
A big hi to you, David. A big hi to Edgar. And then, yeah, I do have to get back to class for all of our listeners and my co-hosts and our guests. So I wish you guys the best. We'll be in touch. And
what are you studying?
Well, right now I'm studying history and political science, but I think I moved. But I do think I'm going to be moving back toward the music education aspect.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So
I taught for most of my career history, language arts, and Spanish, but history is my love.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, then we'll definitely have you on again. I lean more toward the German. I studied in Germany for a little bit. But yeah, it would be nice to chat with you again sometime. I hate that I have to run. It was nice to be with everyone. But we'll see you all again.
Bye, Chris.
Great to see you guys, darling. Great
time. Miss you. Bye.
Likewise. Love you guys. Bye-bye.
Well, that was our co-host, Chris. He had to run, but you know, it's not about him right now. It's about David. He's our guest. David, before we get started and jump into your book, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're about, and then we can jump in and have a very organic conversation regarding Santander.
Okay. Wave at me if I start waxing too long. As I said, sometimes it's dangerous to give me an open mic. But
no, take it. Run with it.
Well,
do
let's
your
see.
Thing.
I'm an Ohio boy. I grew up in Ohio, but I like to say, I grew up in Ohio, but I escaped. and also I was a very Catholic boy. So I went Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, Catholic college. And that definitely affected much of my life, certainly affected why I lived in the closet for so many years. But after college, just on a lark, I don't know what possessed me. I landed in Spain, where I lived for about a year and a half. And that's where I learned to speak Spanish originally. And just the experience of living abroad and immersing myself in a foreign culture and the adventure that was, that transformed me and transformed pretty much the rest of my life. Even so, I lived in the closet till I was 30. So I was a late bloomer. That was just a horrible time of not just living in the closet, but complete sexual repression, everything. And I just became a workaholic. I used to say, you know, sort of the Midas touch of one person trying to make a difference in the world. And it was all very noble and all very wonderful, but ultimately it was a means of escape, a means of running away from myself, intimacy with myself and intimacy with anyone else. And finally, when I turned 30, I just realized there's a problem here. And I went to a Kaiser therapist, and he ever so gently sort of nudged me out of the closet and into the light of my life. And someone once said, Dave, you just didn't come out of the closet. You blew the door off the hinges. Because for 18 years, I wrote a column. And during the latter part of that, I was out as a columnist. I was out as a teacher. I was out as a school administrator. So thank God. I mean, better late than never. But now that I'm on the other side, I don't worry what I say anywhere I go.
So forgive my ignorance, but what is a Kaiser therapist?
Oh, Kaiser Permanente is healthcare out here.
Oh, okay.
I had been working in private schools and really didn't have much of healthcare. And once I was working in public schools, I finally had decent healthcare. And then I learned they had free counseling. And so I went to a phone booth and called a therapist, said I'd like to talk to a therapist. And he is a wonderful guy. I later wrote him a thank you letter.
So it's interesting. I have not been able to, obviously, we talked about this via email the other day. I've not been able to go through the entire book, but there's this one story I read that you were talking about the fact that your therapist, was your therapist religious?
No. He wasn't. He's just, Kaiser Permanente is just the very public health care out here. It's highly rated here in California. And it's not for profit, although the doctor's section of it is for profit, but the healthcare is not. And I had access to free counseling. And I don't know, I could go into that story a little bit, but I had to call from a phone booth because I had a roommate. And I asked to speak to a therapist. And the kind nurse said, well, what about? And I said, well, I'd rather not say. She said, no, you have to tell us. And I think I said something to the effect of, well, I think I perhaps might, maybe I could perhaps might be bisexual or something to that effect. And then I said, and don't you dare put me with one of them, they're gay therapists.
That's what you said. Yeah.
And when I walked into his office, the first thing I said, are you straight? Do you have kids?
Why?
And I'm sure the poor guy just said, oh my God, what a case this guy is. But he was awesome.
Well, tell me a little bit more about like why you were so adamant about not having a gay counselor.
Because he might tell me I was gay.
Okay.
And I wanted this therapist to fix me and make me straight. You know, what was the matter with me? And this was when I was 30. I mean, I was a real case. But the one thing he did, he pretty much said, listen, Dave, I can't tell you who you are, although I'm sure he could have, but he realized that's something that I had to tell myself. But he did say, I can tell you it's time to stop running away. And why don't you get out and meet some gay people? They don't bite, you know. Well, sometimes we do.
Well, we do in the right places too.
But, and I had been I'm an avid hiker and a hike leader for the Sierra Club. And I tried not to notice that the Sierra Club had a gay and lesbian section. So because my therapist told me I had to go meet some gay people, and he was very stern. I still remember he pulled his spectacles down and he pointed his finger at me and he said, don't you dare come back here without something to report. And so I think he gave me a month. And like any bad student, I didn't do anything for three and a half weeks. And then I said, oh my God, I got to go back to the therapist. I haven't met anyone. So I went to my first hike with the Gay and Lesbian Sierra Club. And they were just awesome because I quickly learned to both like and respect them. And they were gay. And I thought, well, if I can like and respect them, then maybe I can do the same to myself.
But I think what was so powerful about that part of the story was you liked and respect them because they were people.
They were, well, I think as I said in the story, I went to the trailhead and I thought I must have gotten it wrong because there was a large group there, but they didn't look gay. And I don't know what I was expecting.
I wasn't there clearly, so
pink spandex with feathers or something, and they were just normal people, and had normal conversation and normal lives, and I was quite shocked by that, and I just realized, well, they're just like me, and they became my dear friends, and they may have saved me from doing something really awful. some of them became dear friends, and I confided in them once that, you know, I'd kind of like to live the normal life, you know, wife and kids and everything, and be accepted. And some of the leaders were older than I was, and they pretty much said, yeah, that's what I did. And I became an alcoholic. And then, you know, 20 years later, I came out to my wife and left her, and I'll never forgive myself for what I did to my wife. So go for it, Dave. And that was the best advice anyone ever gave me when I realized, you know, I have to stop trying to be someone I'm not.
Right.
And so between the therapist and the Sierra Club, and then I became a joiner. Any gay social group, I signed up. Never looked back.
So, Tom, I know you want to say something, so I'll...
Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, comment on, you know, how things were. When you think about how things were in the 70s and 80s, and even into the early 90s, it was the fear of family, right? A lot of people would stay in the closet, you know, just to please their parents, you know. Oh, my parents will die, and then after that point in time, I'll go do what I need to do with my life. But... you know, it wasn't easy to be yourself at a time or at a place in time where people and expectations weighed so heavily on the decisions that you made about yourself.
Well, it was worse than that, because there weren't any Ellen DeGeneres's or Anderson Coopers then. There were no role models.
Right.
When I grew up, I didn't know anyone who was gay. My first gay friend was when I was in my late 20s. And so it was just a really scary proposition, a very lonely, lonely place to be. I mean, I just retired after 36 years, but the last, I think, 4 years, I taught a gay and lesbian studies course at my high school. Now, what a difference that is for the kids growing up today. And even if they aren't in the course, they know that there is one. And so they know they aren't alone. And I was an out educator. There were no out educators. I mean, that was... one of the things that kept me in the closet, because I thought you cannot possibly be gay and be a teacher. And, you know, when I was very Catholic in college, this was the source of angst and rage against God. I thought, how could you possibly give me this gift to be a teacher and then make me gay? I mean, you have some sort of perverse sense of humor, God, because everyone knew at the time that to be gay was to be a pedophile, and right. You could not possibly be gay and be a teacher. And certainly where I started teaching in the United States in Texas, that was true just practically. If people learned you were gay, you were fired. And so you, by definition, you had to live in the closet. So things have changed.
That's super interesting, too, that you're bringing that up, because even in the story that we just previously talked about, you had mentioned that your therapist started laughing at you at one point because you found a student attractive, which, I mean... like it says in the story, young people are attractive. Like, it was interesting that they laughed at you and then followed that up with saying, you're not the only one. And just because you're gay doesn't make it any different.
No, he, at the time, I believed all that pedophilia nonsense. And I thought, God, if I find any of my students attractive at all, then I must be one of them. And I really needed someone to tell me that it was okay for me to be a teacher. But I was terrified. I honestly believed. I said, listen, I think some of my students are attractive. I thought he was going to have to start writing something down and reply, I'm so sorry, David, but I am obligated by law to report you to the authorities. When I told him, I imagine my face, because this is something I'd kept bottled up, and I was terrified of it. I mean, anytime I even saw one of my students that I thought was attractive, I would, and I would sit that kid in the back and almost ignore that kid for fear. And I'm sure when I confided in this therapist, he must have seen the angst and the horror and the terror. And that's what he was laughing at. I mean, he had to take off his glasses and wipe them in the tears. And he just said, oh, David. He said, I can see how this has tormented you. He said, let me be the first to tell you, they're gorgeous. Do you think the straight teachers don't notice? You're allowed to notice too. Listen, I know you're a great educator, and you'll be even better now if you can just go back in the classroom and relax. And he gave me homework. He said, listen, tomorrow when you go back to class, I want you to go walk into every classroom and I want you to look around at the boys and I want you to say, gorgeous, gorgeous, ooh, very gorgeous. And that's okay.
I think that's actually able
to relax. And then I could actually, you know, interact with the gorgeous ones and not feel like there's something the matter with me. So I clearly became a better educator.
I think that's really important that you're saying that out loud. I don't think we've ever actually had this conversation before because there's this stigma of being a gay man, being a gay teacher, and like being a teacher in general. You're like, of course you're going to find students attractive. They're young, they're beautiful, they're, you know, coming into their own. But like, we've never had that conversation before. It's a weird world where we live in, where we have to really acknowledge the fact that there are beautiful people and we're going to find them attractive, and I'm your teacher and that's okay. And that is my thing. I'm going to keep it to myself. But like, the reality is, just because you're gay doesn't mean that your next door teacher or the person next door isn't finding their kids attractive as well. They are as well.
And even the students.
The statistics regarding pedophilia or molestations of kids, actually out gay teachers don't even make a blip. If you look at FBI statistics, it's the apparently straight married ones that you got to worry about. So, but gay teachers, it's extremely rare, especially those that are out and comfortable with themselves, that, you know, they continue to grow up and mature, and that's the way it should be for everybody.
But you know what's really amazing about being an out gay teacher is that you kind of give a platform for kids that don't have a platform, that don't feel comfortable. And I know that in this book, you specifically said that there were a couple things you wanted me to focus on because you knew I couldn't read the whole thing. But St. Gerard High School, that story, I wanted to know if you wanted to kind of elaborate on it, because that was a dark place, but you came out of it.
I don't have the statue here. It's down in Mexico where my partner and I are going to retire. But I had this one student named Jerry, and GQ, an athlete, straight A student, and I was teaching Spanish at the time. And at one time in the class, someone called someone else a faggot. And it just as a joke. They weren't actually trying to humiliate a gay kid. They just said, hey, shut up, faggot. And I intervened and said, hey, listen, we don't use that kind of language around here because, you know, that's no different than any other racial epithet. And it makes people feel bad just because they're different. And that's not what this classroom is about. And he stayed afterwards to say, and it's sad when you think about it, he said, I was the first teacher who had ever stood up for gay people. Now, remember, this is back in, this would have been 1986 or something like that. But even the statistics out of GLSEN today say that most classrooms continue to be unsafe places and that even teachers today are guilty of homophobic remarks. But anyways, after that, he started hanging around me all the time and eating lunch with me. And at Christmas, he gave me this little clay statue of an Aztec king and then hugged me, which was odd. And it was clumsy. And I'm like, whoa, this is weird. And I was at the time closeted even to myself. And so, you know, I wasn't able to be for him the man he had hoped I would be, you know, to be someone who could give him comfort, be the role model that he so much needed, because I was deep in the closet. But you know, I'm teaching in a Catholic school in Texas. During a time of AIDS, I wasn't going to come out of the closet. Mm-hmm. And, but one day he, at a basketball game, he came up, he saw me come in and he came up and said, hey, come on, sit. This is after he had graduated, by the way, and he was going to the local college, and he wanted me to sit next to him in the bleachers. And I said, sure. And then I turned to him and introduced him to the woman I had brought with me, my date, which, you know, I was still trying to be straight. And remind me to follow up with the story about homecoming later on about this, because it gets funny, at least in retrospect. But when he saw that I'd brought a woman as a date, I think the expression I used in the book is his face just collapsed. He just could not believe it. And he very polite. He said, nice to meet you, miss. And then he ran out of the gym, and he never came to talk to me again. I really tremendously let that kid down because I was in the closet.
And you know, And I hear that, and I'm not, you know, things happen, but think about all the people that you didn't let down. And yeah. Is there a positive story that you can share about somebody you didn't let down that you...
Oh, well, I mean, for the latter part of my career, I was out to everybody and I got a lot of notes. I got one note from a kid a year later who never came out to me. And a year later, he just sent me a note of thanks. He said, because you were my teacher, I found the courage to come out to my folks. And so that made me feel really good. And then I was able to create and teach a gay and lesbian studies course. And certainly every single kid that was in my class, I thought, you know, I'm going to be there and give you the information that if I had had when I was your age, my whole life would have been different. Because the closet is no place to live. It's left scars that are very deep with me all my life.
With all of us. I think it's a very... It's funny because there's a sense of safety in that closet, but that's, it's a false sense of safety that you think you're safe in that space, but it's literally consuming you from the inside out. And
you aren't growing and you're missing out on so much of life.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And ultimately, as Harvey Milk said, it's anytime anyone comes out, that is the most powerful political statement you can make. Because many people are homophobic until they realize that someone they love is gay. And then in a snap, they go, oh. And suddenly they aren't homophobic anymore. And so just coming out is the most important thing you can do for the world. And even more importantly, it's the most important thing you can do for yourself. Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you a funny story. Later on, I was in charge of homecoming, or maybe it was the prom. One year I was in charge of homecoming, the other day the prom. So I brought my requisite date. And I was out on the dance floor and something odd happened that it was only in retrospect that I understood. This one kid kept coming over and yanking me away from the girl and trying to get him to dance with him. And I realized now he was openly gay and the kids at that school had figured me out. And they didn't, my being gay didn't bother them. My being closeted did. And they were trying in a not so subtle way to say, oh, come off it, dance with me. But I couldn't. It's only in retrospect that I allowed myself to understand what was going on.
Yeah. And, you know, I going back to the story we just talked about, I think it's important to note that the fact that we fixate on those moments where we feel as though we did wrong by somebody, or we feel as though we didn't do the right thing in support of. But in reality, what you've, even though that one individual may have, you may feel they weren't supported in a way, the amount of people that you have touched and this book itself, you're changing lives. And I think that is what you, as much as we focus on the negative, we need to also focus on some of the positive, because like, yeah, there are going to be people that we lead astray. But at the end of the day, what you're doing in general is pretty beautiful.
Oh, it has a happy ending. You know, being an out teacher was a really fun place to be. And the good news is that the next generation of Americans, we're really, it's a crude statement, but we're winning the issue one coffin at a time, because the next generation doesn't give a damn. They really don't care for the most part. And as an out teacher, I couldn't believe how easily my students accepted me as just no big deal. There's a funny story that an assistant principal told me. He was walking during the in the cafeteria once during lunch, and he overheard the kids talking about me. And one of the kids said to someone who wasn't in my class, and he said, did you hear Mr. Ellison's gay? And the kid said, yeah, but did you hear? He doesn't have a TV. And the whole kid, they said, okay, that's beyond
that's
the
worst.
That's right. So being gay wasn't a big issue, but not having a television, that was unacceptable. And I mean, frankly, I couldn't believe how well I was accepted by the kids. Even this one seventh grade girl, I have this in the book later when I'm finally am out, and I had a rainbow bracelet to sort of assure that I would eventually come out to the kids. So she asked me what rainbow meant, and it was during history class. So I said, and you have to be careful because if I bring up my sexuality during class, then I'm guilty of teaching the gay agenda. So I just said, see me after class. So she came with her entourage and she said, so what does rainbow mean? And I said, gay pride. And she said, does that mean you're gay? And I said, of course. And she said, cool. And this little kid sitting next to me, his real name was Rocky. I forget what I call him in the book, but I'll never forget it. He was just after school, just using my markers on the whiteboard to draw or something. And he just, without even stopping, not even looking at me, he just said, you know, Mr. Ellison, I'm really proud of you for being proud of yourself. That's what a seventh grader told me.
Wow.
And that's amazing. So
the next generation is going to be very different. And I think, you know, all right, my high school now has a gay and lesbian studies course. That's going to spread.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because my roommate, he has a niece who has recently come out as a lesbian, which is amazing. And her parents are so supportive. And she's, I think she's like 13 or 14 at this point. So she's pretty young. And I'm just like, I watch her and I'm like confused by it. Like literally, because she's so young, I'm confused by it because it took me. I mean, I did come out at like 16, but it took me so long to actually address my parents. And at 14, she's addressing her parents. I mean, you're right. The world is changing. This is great. It's crazy.
Well, and I've had several students who in high school came out as transgender. And that to me, I think it does require certain courage to come out of the closet, but to come out as transgender, all right, my hat's off to you. You know, that's a quantum leap above. And I'm just really impressed by these kids who have a courage I never knew.
It's a whole different ball game for them, right? It's like coming out for them will never be the same thing as coming out, you know, 30 years ago, because the idea around homosexuality is completely different nowadays. As you know, as you've mentioned, you know, your students are so much more, they're in a different level of understanding and humanity, and the level of intolerance as far as from a sexuality perspective is completely different.
Yes and no. I will say that transgenders are being murdered right and left in the United States today. And if you go to GLSEN, it's the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, a phenomenal organization. But every year they publish statistics as the amount of bullying and harassment that continues in our culture. So yes, things are much better. We have a long way to go.
Absolutely. I mean, just last week we had in my little island of Puerto Rico, we had two transgender women who were burned alive and killed. They were murdered. So, you know, the actions that are being taken against our trans brothers and sisters and the violence surrounding that, especially transgender women of color, is so unbelievable. And to think that we are in 2020, that this is still happening is quite shocking.
Well, the only thing is, and this is my one debt to Trump, and that is, and only one.
But, you saw my face, right?
Yeah. Okay. But the one debt I have is I did not understand the level of prejudice and racism and bigotry that still existed in the United States until he gave it permission to come out into the light of day. Now, maybe that's my white privilege talking, but I think that's true of a lot of other people as well. That, you know, I could not believe, or I still cannot believe, the level that is still there in the United States.
I'll lift you up and say that it's also my white privilege talking, but there was a moment, and I'll never forget it, when marriage equality got passed, when we had Obama in office, I felt elated. I felt happy. I felt secure. I felt good about this country, about everything we were doing, about the movement we were making. And then this happened, and Trump came into power, and you see these hate groups just coming out of the woodwork, and And it makes you realize that, like, the work that we've been doing, while it's been really important and good, it's not enough.
Well, it is important to remember that pre-World War II Berlin was one of the most gay-friendly cities on the planet. And then when Hitler came to power, well, we all know what happened. Mm-hmm. And so right now, Trump has already stacked the courts. If he's able to put another one on the Supreme Court and replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I think gay marriage will be target number one. And so we cannot rest on our laurels, no matter how far we think, okay, we've got gay marriage, and so we've won. Yeah, Berlin had won, and then Hitler came to power.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's one thing we learn, I try to teach in my history classes, democracy is a very fragile thing, and it's under attack right now. We live in dire times.
Yeah. So speaking of Europe and being abroad, you mentioned that you spent some time in Spain.
Yes, I did.
For a while, and you learned Spanish, you went there. Were you still in the closet at that time when you were visiting?
Completely.
So did you find the experience of Europe, because they were a little bit more open-minded as far as like homosexuality in Europe than they've ever been in the U.S. How was your experience in Spain?
Well, I have to say, I mean, I was back in Spain, I don't know, about 8 years ago, and I was at a bus stop, and I saw a group of high school kids that were evidently waiting for the next bus, and they were just lounging around on the grass. And I kind of did a double take, because there were everyone lying on top of everyone, boys on top of boys, girls on top of girls. And I just looked over and said, wow, that still could not happen in the United States. Mm-hmm. But in Spain, they just don't get it. And if girls were on top of, you know, lying with boys, that didn't mean they were gay or not, just felt they were comfortable with each other. But when I was there, this was shortly after Franco. And so it was still a very tight country coming into its own. But, you know, I had crushes on two. I had one of the groups I joined there was a sort of a mountaineering group. And we go to the local mountains, and I had crushes on two of them, and two of them came on to me. But at the time, I would not allow myself to understand what they were asking for. And I just couldn't go there. And that's some of my most difficult memories, when you think, damn, all the sex I could have had.
And, I'll tell you, it's very liberal.
I was pro-closeted. I'm so terrified of sex, not only because I'd been raised Catholic, but also that was the height of AIDS. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even know how it was really spread at the time. So there was just tremendous fear.
Yeah.
For me, I used to give blood all the time, and I was born prematurely, which I cover in the book. And my blood was special because I hadn't been exposed to some virus. So it was perfect for premature babies. And I thought, oh, isn't this awesome? I was premature. I used to give blood all the time. However, I knew if I had sex with a man once, I could never again give blood. And that's still true today. And I still can't give blood. And so that was why there was no testing the waters. It would be a real sense of no return. It was you either jump in and take the leap, or you stay out.
So even removing yourself from the U.S. and from the situation of being around people that you knew, that you grew up with, wasn't enough to sort of kind of let your guard down and be you in a different space.
I brought the Catholic Church and the sexual repression and my poor self-image with me. I mean, it's that one thing is, wherever you go, there you are. You can run, but you cannot
hide. Oh, honey, and I've heard that so many times.
And so I was in Spain, but I was still David. And I was still, this is probably TMI. Edgar's going to kill me for saying this online, but I'll give an example of just how sexually repressed I was at the time. When I was in college, I kept a journal, and at the time it was a form of prayer. I'd write, "Dear God." And very often in my journal, I go back and read them today and go, "Oh my God," I'd write, "Dear God, I failed again today. I had masturbated."
Oh God.
And so, you know, that's where I was in college. I could not even deal with masturbation. So the idea of having sex with another man, I probably would have killed myself.
I burned all my journals.
Deeply repressed I was. And So so good to be, you know, that's now just a bad memory.
So that's really intense. And I'm so happy that you shared that. We've talked a lot about suicide on the show, and it's scary to think that people still feel and find themselves in situations like that. And thank you so much for sharing that. But I do want to get back to the book a little bit, because we are tangenting a little bit.
sorry about that.
No, it's fine. I love it. I love the conversation that has been going on. But so how did this book come to be? Like, why did you write this book?
I do want to say, truth in advertising, this is not a gay book. It's a book just about my life. And since my being gay is a part of that, I included that in the book. But it's even more about my growing up, the teachers that formed me, my parents. It's about my career in education and about my travels. And it's about my coming out and my experiences, both a closeted and a gay teacher. That book is, I guess, 30 years in the making. Because it began as a column that I wrote for the local newspaper. And I wrote about my experience as a teacher. And I wrote that for 18 years. And so that got my writing about, and then during the summers, I would travel and I would write about that. And so that's a lot of these, much of the book has been published previously as columns. And so the good news is it's an easy book to read because they're the chapters, most of them are very short.
Yes.
And I've arranged them thematically. The first part is called Rambling About Life, and that's about my growing up. The second part is about rambling about schools, my experience as a teacher and an assistant principal and a teacher trainer and so on. And then the final thing is rambling about the world. But they all of them are from the point of view of teaching and a philosopher. Some of them I wrote specifically for the book. For example, the piece on my coming out, I thought I can't put this book out. It is a memoir and not include that. So that's one that's it's seen the light of day for the first time in this book. And then the biggest adventure in my travels was when I was arrested in Mexico. I nearly died. And the second part of that is seeing the light of day for the first time in this book.
Let's talk about that arrest in Mexico. What's going on there?
Complete and utter stupidity. This was, I'm guessing, 1985, 1986. How much time do I have, by the way? I don't.
Tom will cut you off. Don't worry.
This is okay, your show. Well,
I have to say, one of the themes of the book is just disillusionment and the letting go of my naivete. And I was a true believer in the Catholic Church and the United States. Everyone loves us because we're the bastion of goodness on earth. And then I went to Spain and that collapsed. The Spaniards let me know, and they were trying to tell me what was going on in Central America, specifically El Salvador and Guatemala. And I wouldn't believe them. And I just said, lies. I know that's not true. You're lying. But I went back and I taught in Texas. And I shortly after I arrived there, I was at a party of educators and friends. And the host came over and said, hey, Dave, there's a kid over in the corner. He speaks only Spanish. Would you go talk to him? And I said, oh, cool, Spanish. So I went over and I couldn't get him to say a word. The only thing he said was muy mala gente, which means very bad people. Oh. So I went back to the host. And I said, what is going on? And he was a Guatemalan refugee. And he had been, the soldiers, and I have to say the soldiers who had been trained and armed by the United States and that were defending the brutal regime that we had installed after our coup. Now, all of this, I still had to learn. But here's this 15-year-old kid who is a refugee. The soldiers killed his parents. He fled and through Mexico, and the Mexicans were ruthless to Guatemalans. He was now an undocumented immigrant in the United States. If the immigration services captured him, they would deport him back to Guatemala to certain death. And so as a result of that party, overnight, I got involved in the refugee movement to get the Salvadoran and Guatemalan refugees north to Canada where they could be safe. And then I thought, well, I love to travel and I love to volunteer. So I said, let me volunteer in one of the Guatemalan refugee camps. And I tried for 6 months to secure a job, and I could not. And in retrospect, I know why, but they wouldn't tell me. So I volunteered in Tijuana at an orphanage there instead. And then afterwards, I went traveling, and I ended up in a town called Palenque in the very south of Spain, in the southernmost state of Chiapas. And because I wanted to see the Mayan ruins there. Mm-hmm. Well, I stayed in the cheapest hotel in town, and there were all these buses parked outside. I struck up a conversation with one of the bus drivers, and he said, well, we're taking the Guatemalan refugees north, away from the camps, away from the border. And I said, oh, that's why I wanted to volunteer. And I outstubborned him. And 3 days later, he let me get on his bus. And it was an all-night journey out into the middle of the jungle to a place called Bocala Cantun. And got off the bus there to just say, hey, I'd like to volunteer. And not knowing that I was walking into the middle of a war zone. And I walked into everywhere I was looking, there were all these soldiers carrying automatic weapons. I thought, my God, what's going on here? And I walked in and just to the immigration official there and said, hi, I'm David from the United States. I'm here to volunteer. And he just went, ay, ay, ay. And he's the only reason I'm alive, because he kept me alive. I should and could have died. I could and probably should have died there in the jungles. Because it was pretty obvious to me what was going on. The federal police who showed up 3 days after my arrest there were using those buses to smuggle drugs north through the military checkpoints. And they knew that I had figured that out. And so they threatened to take me into the middle of the jungle. They said, oh, you wanted to see some camps? We're going to take you out tomorrow. And I went to Jorge, who is the head immigration official. I said, they can't do that. You arrested me. And he pretty much said, they can do whatever the hell they want.
Oh, shit.
And that night, in the middle of a torrential downpour, he probably about 3 or 4 a.m., he tapped me on the shoulder. He said, get up. We're leaving. And he got me in his Jeep, and he got me out of town. Wow. I thought he had been told to take me out. I thought the federals had told him, get rid of this guy. And he made me sit up front next to the driver. And for some reason, they had left me with my Swiss Army knife. And I still remember Jorge sat behind me with his Colt 45. And I thought, oh, God, he's been told to just drive out in the jungle and don't bring me back. And so I opened up my little Swiss Army knife saying, I'm not going to go down without a fight. And instead, he drove me all the way to Palenque. He invited all the other immigration officials to meet me. And I asked, what are you doing? And he said, David, the more people who know of you, the harder it is to disappear you. And so Jorge saved my life.
That's amazing. Can I just say, like, I'm thinking about our first email interaction where you responded to me and I was like, I had found your email in our junk box.
Yeah.
and you said, I'm not junk. And I was like, no, of course not. I'm so sorry. Like, you know, I was just looking at it the other day. After this conversation, all I can think about is how the hell did your email end up in our junk box? Because this conversation has blown my mind.
it's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
It's certainly incredible. So you wrote the book. It was published.
I did.
It was released. What's your most interesting story to write? Like, which one really like drew you in and say, okay, I'm going to go all in because this is what I feel that I love writing about? What aspect of your life was the best to write about?
It's hard to choose. I'll tell you the most heart-wrenching one. I dedicated the book to him. His name is Michael.
Oh, sorry.
And this is when I was an assistant principal, and this kid was always in my office for some reason or other, but it was mostly for just stupid things. Except the only serious trouble, he'd smoke marijuana out behind the gym, and that was a suspendable offense. So I did have to suspend him a few times, but I knew he had a horrible home life. But that came into stark relief when, after one of his suspension, the father came into my office and said, Michael, why don't you just kill yourself? I'm sick and tired of you. And I literally said, you get out of my office. I was so upset. And it was such a horrible home life that he came from. Let's see if I can try to keep this a short story. But his parents were very estranged, and then they were finally divorced, and his mom was a very, very closeted lesbian. Now, this was after I was out, so I was an out assistant principal. But his Michael's mother was a lesbian, but not comfortable about it at all, and very upset about it. And then things got really, really weird. His mother's girlfriend ended up having a baby with Michael's father.
Okay.
And it just was just creepy, the whole thing, and just really unhappy human beings. And in the end, I had to expel Michael, and it broke my heart to do it. But this time he had brought marijuana in, and he'd given it to his girlfriend, who I adored. She saw in Michael everything that I did. She was a lovely young girl. I thought, this is phenomenal that they are together. But then I observed him passing the marijuana off to her, and I had to do my job. I went to the other vice principal. I said, this is what, I don't want to do this. And she said, Dave, you have to do your job. And so my job was to expel him that day. And then I ended up getting a job as a vice principal in another town. And 4 months later, I think it was just a few months later, I learned that the mother had come home and shot her girlfriend, shot Michael, and then shot herself. And I got to tell you, I should have been at his funeral. And grief is one of the emotions that I don't allow myself to feel. And I could not, I found an excuse not to go to his funeral. And that's another of my major regrets. Many of the kids who went to his funeral knew how much I cared about him, and they were stunned that I wasn't there. But it was too much for me at that time. Mm-hmm. And as I say in the book, you know, I went into education to try to help the most disadvantaged kids. And in the end, I was the one who just sort of sent him on his way to his doom. I ended up having to expel a kid that I adored, and I could not help him. And so that's the tragedy of being a public school teacher, is there's so many kids. I mean, our society expects public schools to fix all of societal ills, and that's not going to work.
Right.
And in my previous book on education reform, I said, you can't just reform education. You've got to reform the United States. Mm-hmm. And only then can we really help these kids.
Well, first and foremost, I'm sorry for your loss. Obviously, he was someone that was very important to you. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard when you have to make a choice between what your job is and what your heart says you should do, right? Because I'm sure that that was something that you battled with, the decision to expel this young man.
The decision that I made was I could have kept my mouth shut. But I was, a new assistant principal, and I went to my mentor, Marlene, and she's the other assistant principal. And I said, we all know. And she just said, David, you have to do your job.
Yeah.
And I didn't last very long as an assistant principal. And that's one of the reasons. I'd rather be teaching kids than expelling them.
Yeah. I want to read this very short, the dedication. So the dedication for this book is for Mom and Dad and for Michael, whom life cheated then abandoned, for all the Michaels. And that is so beautiful now hearing that story. And before we let you go, I always ask this question to all of our authors. What are your hopes and dreams for this book?
Well, like any author, it's going to become a bestseller. You know, my only question is, who's going to play me in the movie?
It would certainly be an amazing movie. I'd watch it.
I have a thing for bald guys, so I could find a couple people.
No, actually, I've got, nearly 30 years of my life in my writing, and I wanted to see another life, because my writing is part of my purpose on earth, I'm convinced. And so I priced the book, as you see. I think it's $2.99 for the Kindle version and $6.99 for the paperback. I've priced it really low because I just want people to read the damn thing. So that's my hope, is that a lot of people will read it and be inspired. And not only, they'll be inspired a lot of things. I mean, the overarching theme is to live an authentic life. And we've got only one life to live. And I had a professor in college, Dr. Pasquale, who taught me existentialism. And he kept saying the most important thing in life is to live authentically. And at the time, I didn't understand. And now I do. And you know, the opening quote in the first section is something that my mom taught me. This quote is from Helen Keller. And she handed it to me in a little poster that I framed. But I guess it was when later in life she understood me a little bit more. And the quote from Helen Keller is, "Life is either a daring adventure or nothing." And that's really the theme of the book, is seize that adventure and live it. And then your life will have been worth living. And I've been very fortunate to have had many adventures and to have learned finally how to live authentically.
Wow. Certainly, David, very powerful. Thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. This is a really powerful book, and I can't wait to finish it.
feel the same way after you're done.
Look, I was talking to my coworkers earlier. I'm just like, I have so many books to catch up on from our guests on the show. But where can our listeners find your book? Where can they find you if they want to reach out?
Well, it's available on Amazon right now. It's exclusively on Amazon. So it's called Santander, Rambling on Borrowed Time. And Borrowed Time is a reference to the first chapter, because I was a preemie and I was supposed to have died before I was born. So ever since then, I've realized I'm living on borrowed time. But Santander, Rambling on Borrowed Time. And then I have an email. It's david@santanderamemoir.com.
Fantastic.
And so email me there.
Awesome. So I wanted to say very quickly, su acento es perfecto. I just had to say that. Es, como le digo, el español es un lenguaje muy bonito, pero sí, difícil.
Precioso, bello.
Difícil de aprender.
Sí, el subjuntivo fenomenal, muy difícil.
So I'll tell you a little story before I let you go. I didn't always speak Spanish fluently, and because I was born and raised here, my parents were here when we were all born. And so one day my mother decides, I think I was like maybe 10 or 11, she's going to pick up, take her boys, move to Puerto Rico, and just say, here we are. And we were thrust into the school system there. And
how old were you again?
I was about 10 or 11.
Oof.
And everything was in Spanish. And my Spanish teacher, Dr. Alonso, would hit me with a yardstick. He was mean, but I appreciate the fact that he did. And he was very stern and very, he was stern. He was really focused on making sure that if you're going to be in my class and you're going to speak Spanish, you're going to do it right. I mean, I had a nickname in school while I was in Puerto Rico. They called me El Gringo. Anybody that doesn't live on the island, that comes from outside of the island, is a gringo. Doesn't matter who you are.
They called me Güero.
Güero.
Whitey.
So I just wanted to mention that, and I wanted to thank you for taking an interest in learning a little bit of our culture, and dedicating your professional career to trying to be as best you can a role model for young children, even if it was later in life, because I think that books like this and stories like yours will change someone's life profoundly when they read it. So thank you.
I hope so.
Thank you.
You know, life's been very good to me. And so it's all about giving back. And so writing the book is a way of giving back.
Well, we certainly appreciate
paying it forward.
Absolutely. So we certainly appreciate your time. Thank you for reaching out to us. I'm sorry that your email.
I loved it. This has been fun.
I'm sorry.
We'll have you back.
Yeah, of course.
Oh. Right.
I'm sorry that your email ended up in our trash bucket. I mean, in our spam folder, but it's,
I was like, what? I never check our junk mail. And I was like, there are so many emails in here.
It was fate. It was fate.
And the last email you had sent was like, this is the last time I'll email. I'll stop bothering you. And I'm like, oh my God, no, I'm sorry. We would have responded.
It was truly an amazing conversation. Thank you for joining us. And as I always say to all of our guests, you know, once you're on the show, you're family. So feel free if you have any updates on your book or anything that you're doing that's amazing in supporting the community, reach out to us. We'll be more than happy to have you come back on and have an amazing conversation, because truly this was amazing. Thank you.
All right. I'll be in touch.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both. And bye. Thanks for, just to pay it back, your show is also paying it forward. And I'm sure there are many closeted people throughout this country that tune in and feel, for at least this hour, they can feel like they're with family and they can be themselves and listen to people like them. So it's a tremendous service that you guys are doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Well,
ladies and gentlemen, that, of course, was our guest. And David Ellison's book, again, is available on Amazon. He's going to, you know, obviously do well. I think that, you know, the content of the book is very personal, but it's also very relevant to some of the struggles that people in the LGBT community still go through even till this day. And so we're super excited for him. I hope that the book does well. And you guys, we encourage that you go. If you have Kindle, so I have Kindle, the Kindle app on my iPhone, and I used to have a Kindle. It's somewhere buried somewhere. The if you are a Prime subscriber, Prime member, the book is free. Obviously, he'll still get credit for it, but you have access to the book, so make sure that you go and get it.
It's worth it.
It is, and if not, it's $6.99 for the paperback version and $2.99 for the Kindle version. Either or, we encourage that you go out and get it. So, we've still got some things that we need to cover, and I'm super excited to announce.
Yeah, we got to zoom through this. I can't believe we've been doing this for so long already. So that was a great conversation, though.
It was amazing. I'm super excited that we found that email and that we got him on the show to talk about it. So that being said, yesterday was Lesbian Visibility Day. It is important to acknowledge that. We see you. We acknowledge you. Your contributions to the LGBT community are amazing, which is why I'm wearing flannel today. In honor of all of you lesbians out there, I love you all. And I also wanted to mention that GLAAD had an event yesterday. It was the event itself. It was called Together in Pride. You are not alone. We mentioned this earlier in our broadcast. And it was basically it was an amazing event. It had so many amazing people. The goal was to raise money and bring awareness to people that, unfortunately, amidst COVID-19, are currently, there's a lot of people out there that are stuck at home in very uncomfortable situations and not being able to be themselves and who they are. And so a lot of celebrities and a lot of people came together to send affirmation, messages of love, messages of positivity and strength for all of these people that may find themselves in situations in where, you know, it's not ideal being, you know, repressed and suppressed of who you truly are. And so the event was a live stream that was done yesterday. They were able to actually raise over $225,000 for Centerlink, the community of the LGBTQ centers that are part of that organization. The goal again was to raise money for Centerlink, and it featured a lot of amazing people. MJ Rodriguez, which is one of our amazing transgender stars on FX's Pose. So we know her as Blanca. You had Ross Matthews, Kathy Griffin. Billy Porter came on and gave an amazing speech, as he always does. He's just fantastic. Rosie O'Donnell. There are performances by many musical artists, including one of our very own guests here on the show, Melissa Etheridge, who had an amazing session. She did Pulse, among some of her other well-known hits. And it was great. It was absolutely incredibly great, and I'm happy that I watched it. And that video is still available. The entire performance is still available. You can go to GLAAD, GLAAD.org, and watch it in its entirety. And they also announced that there's going to be a new series being released. And so they played the previews for that series, which has or ties into one of the stories that Nick has. And so I want Nick to cover that story first, and then we'll tell you what this series is.
All right. So, yeah, no, I've been all about trying to entertain myself and get my brain off everything that's going on in the world right now. And so I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks and watching a lot of movies. But I just found out that Love, Simon, the author, announced a surprise sequel, which will come out for Pride Month, and it will be available as a book, as a download, and also as an audiobook. I haven't clicked on the link yet because I can't remember the name of the title of the book. But it's super exciting just to see that we have continual content coming out that the LGBTQ plus community can identify with, mm-hmm. especially in a time when we're stuck at home. I'm constantly looking for new books or new movies or new something just so that I feel like a little bit more connected. And so seeing that this new book is coming out that is a sequel to Love, Simon is super, super exciting. So this book is coming out. It is called Love Creekwood. And will take place after the events of Love, Simon. So hopefully they're in college. We're not exactly sure. But I believe it's being released June. Oh, my God. I can't find the date right now, of course. It's being released in June, whatever. But it's super exciting to hear about that. But that ties into what Tommy was talking about, which mm-hmm. is the Hulu special or the Hulu series that's coming out, Love, Victor.
That's right. And it's loosely based on the idea of Love, Simon. You know, it's a very young man who is going through the motions of discovering himself and where he fits in all, in, you know, in this amazing world of being a member or part of the community of the LGBT, you know, community. It's incredible. So we were watching the preview earlier, which was also part of this broadcast for GLAAD. And Nick was just like, I cannot, you know, it's like, you send me this video 5 minutes like before we're due to go on air and you expect me to just pause it and look, no, I'm gonna watch this now.
Well, I mean, in the trailer, there is literally a moment where like these two guys are like clearly having some sexual tension. Somebody has feelings for somebody. And then all of a sudden they're not paying attention and they're steaming milk and it explodes all over somebody. And I'm like, oh, come on. And I lost it. I lost it. There was white milk all over this guy's fucking face and chest. I was dying. It was hilarious.
And the little kid just like, I can't. I gotta go. Forget it. This was a mistake. And he just runs out. It's super cute, you know, and let it be known that there is no one on earth that loves, you know, rom-coms more than Trish does.
Oh, my God.
Especially when they're part of, you know, when it's a gay-themed rom-com. So mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a very cute series, and I'm super excited. So just to let you know, the series itself, again, it's called Love, Victor. It's going to be a Hulu series. Is going to be released on June 19th, so also on Pride Month, just in time for us to be able to have more content to view amid, you know, while we confine ourselves to our homes. So that's amazing.
I also want to bring up one more thing before we go into, you know, whatever we have to do. I had mentioned last week that Hans had released Jonathan's Hope, book one, which is a trilogy on Audible. And I finished it, and oh my God. Oh my God, Hans, he did it again. He did it again. Like the book, there are moments where I was like, oh my God, I can't believe he wrote that. And then there were moments where like my heart was wrenching. It's such a beautiful book because there are so many elements to it. There's a character who lost pretty much everything and found hope and love. Jonathan, he found hope and love in the most unlikely of places. And then another character who, in another way, lost everything as well, but found love again. And it, like, the story itself is so beautiful, and it proves, it not proves because it's a story, but like it shows you that you should always have hope, and that there can always be a way to find light and happiness and love, no matter what situation you find yourself in. And there are moments in that book where I texted him and I'm like, I can't believe you fucking wrote that. Like, what the fuck? But it was, literally, I could not stop listening to the book. It was so amazing. So I would really encourage all of our listeners, if you can, if you haven't either, if you like to read books, buy the book. Jonathan's Hope, it's on Amazon. If you like to listen to books, audible.com or on Amazon, download the book. It is really, truly amazing.
Did Vance narrate this one too?
Vance was the narrator,
yeah. And that's why it makes... So Vance has an amazing voice for narration, and he's done a lot of good work with Hans himself. Anytime you hear that man's voice, it's like it's smooth sailing. I don't even take
Well, you know what was interesting is it was hard for me a little bit in the beginning because I was thinking of the Golden One. I was so used to hearing him narrate the Golden One that I'm like, oh, I've got to shift my brain because I'm like waiting for, you know, Mage and like all the different characters in the Golden One. But he is so talented that like within the first like chapter and a half, I had completely forgot about the Golden One, even though it's an amazing book. And I was like, just right into this next book. And it really is something that I would encourage people to listen to. It's emotional. It's a roller coaster, but it's beautiful. And it's got a really amazing message with a wonderful ending.
That's amazing. So check it out. All right. Why don't we bring this home, darling?
So oh, yeah.
Am do you want to jump into Mama Kim's Minute?
It's Mama Kim's second this week.
Yeah, it's we only, 1 second.
She's busy, like, sewing for Pocket Pride Plus. So this week we got one thing, and she wants us all to check out A Secret Love. So amid shifting times, two women kept their decade-long love secret. Decades-long love a secret, but coming out later in life with their own set of challenges. And it's about, I believe it's about the baseball team, right?
Is it A League of Their Own?
Yeah, I believe it's about that, about the two characters in that movie.
Hmm. Yeah, I remember seeing something, an article regarding, you know, some of the actual characters who were loosely based on what was shown in that movie being two lesbians, which wouldn't surprise me. I mean, there's a lot of women during that time that gravitated towards the sports, softball, in that time and, you know, were, but couldn't admit, you know, like our guest, because of, you know, life and how people perceived homosexuality, couldn't be who they wanted to be. So interesting. Yeah.
So again,
we'll definitely check it out.
It's a Netflix film. It's available now. It's called A Secret Love. And again, it's on Netflix. So check
it
out.
I'm going to watch it tonight. Good. So, all right. Well, we have our Gay Talk term for today. You know that we always bring you a Gay Talk term every week. It is picked out of this Gay Talk book that we found on Amazon. Well, Trish found it. And so today's Gay Talk term, of course, brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com. Oh,
it sounds like we're like robots right now.
So, I know. It's so weird.
It is hidden treasure. And basically what it is someone who winds up being sexier than you first anticipated. He turned out to be hidden treasure. Looks aren't everything, you know. So that's our Gay Talk term today, hidden treasure.
Which actually is kind of perfect because David was a hidden treasure. He was stuck in our junk mail and he was amazing having him on the show today. And he was hidden in our junk mail. So, all right. So on this day in gay history, of course, brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com.
Is marriage equality went into effect in Iowa when April 27th, 2009, where Iowa. It is the third U.S. state to allow same-sex couples to marry.
That's amazing. All right, well, we've got some announcements before we say goodbye and wrap it up. If you love the show, make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. Doing so allows you to get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device as soon as our episodes are published. You can also support us on Patreon. Patreon is a service that allows you, our listeners, to support the show with a monetary donation. Those donations are collected monthly and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. Elsie's not here tonight, so I'll let Nick read the next one.
All right, next week we welcome back, of course, Dr. Evan Goldstein for the next installment of Tales from the Tale. And thank you to our guest, David Ellison, for joining us on today's show. All the information for his book will be available on tonight's post. And here we go, everybody. Get your discount for Future Method today. Each time you clean out with water or enemas, delicate tissues are harmed and cells are damaged, increasing chances of injury and or STDs. The first of its kind, doctor-developed formula that gently cleanses before you play without hurting your bum. And now you can use code GAYTALK20 for 20% off, valid for one purchase or a subscription per person.
I always like when you read that. So we were supposed to create this whole, like, you know, automated audio recording of that. But I like when he reads it. And when he stumbles on it, it's even better. So, okay. Well, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under shows and episodes. You can also download our show as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces, you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, just head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab located at the top of the web browser. There you can leave comments, you can suggest topics, you can leave a question for the cast or an individual host, and you can also call us and leave us a voicemail with your questions. We can answer those for you on the show. The phone number is 334-GAY-TALK, and if you need those digits, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Ladies and gents, thank you, and that is our show. Bye!
Bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.